I'm going to go to Mr. Joel Kotkin, who is a senior fellow at the Center for the New West and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He's the founder of the New Vision Business Council. Mr. Kotkin is the co-author of The Third Century, Tribes, How Race, Religion, and Identity Determine Success in the New Global Economy. He is a contributor to the LA Times, The Washington Post, and The Wall Street Journal. Mr. Kotkin joins us today from Los Angeles. We're delighted to have you and look forward to your testimony. So if you would proceed, Mr. Kotkin.
Thank you very much, Senator. I greatly appreciate this opportunity. I'm also honored to share, in an electronic sense, a platform with my friend Alvin Toffler, who's also a fellow Angeleno. Shows you how spread out LA is that for two of us to get together, we have to be 3,000 miles apart. But what I'd like to basically start with is maybe some of the implications of what Alvin has been talking about and sort of where he was going toward the end and try to carry us in that direction. It's sort of probably bad manners for me to say this, but I think that essentially Washington will become much less important in the years to come. And the question is whether or not it will be relevant at all. It really depends on whether or not you are going to live up to the challenges that are going to be coming as we begin to make some of the changes that Alvin's been talking about. I just want to go through three things fairly quickly. One is on the political side. We've had a tendency in the United States, I would think, since at least the 1820s, 1830s, to look more and more to the central government as the place where we can solve most of our problems. And there were reasons for this. I'm not a revisionist who says, well, everything we did since 1840 was a bad idea. I think we did some very good things. We needed a national road system. Obviously, the Civil War created a need for centralized government. The challenges of Reconstruction, the challenges brought on by industrialization, the challenges of the First World War, the great challenge of the Depression, the challenge of the Second World War, and finally, the challenges of the Cold War and the struggle for civil rights. Each one of these things required a national solution, and it would be very hard to say how we could have, for instance, completed or moved forward the liberation of African Americans, for instance, had we not had the national government involved. And so, as a Democrat, I know that may be increasingly a dirty word, but as a Democrat, I honor the efforts of Roosevelt, Truman, Johnson, Humphrey, the Kennedys, and of course, most of all, Dr. Martin Luther King, in beginning to move forward some of these things on a national level. I also honor those Republicans, such as Eisenhower, Nixon, and Reagan, who played a key role in winning the Cold War. All these forces, both the social changes and the international challenges, forced us to look to Washington for more and more solutions. That's changing. Alvin was mentioning, and I think very accurately, the fact that different regions of this country are almost like separate countries, even within the same state, they're like separate countries. And essentially, what we're dealing with more and more are regions who are in many ways almost as if they were city-states in the Italian sense in the 13th or 14th century. Basically, regions in this country are now essentially fighting each other over supply of capital, over where they can get investment from, over jobs, over intellectual property, over who can get the most talented people. And I think that what you find as you speak around the country, and I do quite a bit of this to various groups, if you're here in California, or you're in the Puget Sound, or you're in Texas, or you're in Omaha, you find that people don't care about so-called American competitiveness. It's a big buzzword in Washington. But basically what people are really thinking about is, how does Omaha fit into the world economy? They're not being parochial, they're being very outward, but on the other hand, they're really interested in how Omaha fits in. And if California has a 15% unemployment rate, or New York has a 20% unemployment rate, that's really not their main concern, except maybe it affects one of their many markets, which may be also in another country. So what you really have is a kind of regional focus that is now more and more the important thing that people in the business world, particularly small business, really deals with. And these people are increasingly very, very sophisticated. You find even in small towns, you have people who have contacts in London or in Tokyo or in other parts of the world. They don't need to go through New York or Washington to go and do what they want. And they have their contacts on Wall Street, they have their contacts in the City of London, they have their contacts in the Marunouchi District of Tokyo, and they can deal with those without the intervention of the government, of the federal government. The other thing that's really interesting is what's happening on the governmental level itself. Because of the kind of information that we now have available, because I can plug into, in many ways, the same database as somebody in Washington, that a city manager in a small town in Central California or in Colorado has access to much of the same data, we no longer need to look to Washington for expertise. And frankly, people do not think that they have to go to Washington for expertise. In the previous era, where information was very difficult to get at, and it took a tremendous concentration of people to process the information, then you had more of a need for centralized organization. Today, I think we don't. Therefore, I think it's one of the things that makes people feel very, very uncomfortable with the federal government beginning to set policies in detail for what happens on the local level. So I think that we have to begin to understand, what is the federal government's role in this? What are the rules that need to be set so that we have a civilized society? What are the overarching tax policies that might allow these regions to flourish? But we have to come in with the understanding that each one of these regions is essentially functioning in a semi-autonomous state. That's why we have today periods, for instance, in the 1980s, where the Northeast and California did very, very well, and parts of, let's say, the energy producing regions were in trouble. Now we have a period where now California is just coming out of a recession, and the rest of the country is just starting maybe to go back into one. So, you know, you have economies that respond very differently and have very different affiliations. Again, if you take a look at the Puget Sound region, they're very Pacific Rim oriented. You go to Miami, Pacific Rim is not so important. To them, it's more the Caribbean and South America. In New York, it's a very European focus. And these changes are going to become more and more profound. Now, this is matched with what I think is, to me, maybe the most interesting of all the changes, which are the cultural changes that are taking place. As the different regions are becoming not more similar as they have been doing for a long time, but they're becoming in many ways increasingly different. Now, the biggest factor here, I think, is the change in the ethnic composition of the country. About one out of every three school children in the United States today is either African American, Latino, or Asian. Only one out of every four has even partial British descent. So we're really looking at a very different country than the country that we had, let's say, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and certainly the country we had 100 years ago. I think that we basically, as I see it, have three different cultures on a very broad sense that are very different. The issues they deal with are very different. For instance, much of the country, particularly the southern part of the United States, lives in what I would call a black-white paradigm, still playing out the tragedy of slavery and its aftermath. And you have some of that in some of the other major cities in the Midwest where southern people migrated during the early parts of the 1900s. That is one America that has a whole series of issues. The issues may be more focused on racial differences, less on other issues such as language and culture. The second major cultural zone, if you will, is what I call the Baha'i zone, which is more or less that part of the country which has remained more or less predominantly white, predominantly Anglo, as we would say in California, in its culture. And that is an area where many people from the from other regions are coming because they feel that these biracial, multiracial societies aren't working. And they have very different dynamics. The third are the areas that I study the most, which are what is called the cosmopolitan regions, and those are concentrated in the cities of the Northeast, the Gulf region, the Atlantic coast of Florida, and the around the West Coast. We have to understand that the profound influence of the current immigration on the cultural differences between the parts of the country is amplified because that immigration has been very concentrated. Roughly 70% of all the 1980s immigrants landed in seven metropolitan areas, little Los Angeles area, New York, Miami, San Francisco, Houston, Washington, and Chicago. That has created radically different compositions in the various parts of the United States and very different issues in those parts of the United States. About one-third of all the people in Los Angeles are foreign-born, about 25% in the San Francisco Bay Area. The national average is about 9%, and there are parts of this country where it's 2, 3, 4%. Now, this is going to be a very, very different kind of society than that of the other two types of societies, and it will include lots of different people. You know, recently you have people going and saying, well, we don't like the cultural standards of Hollywood, and of course, as somebody who works in Hollywood, I can understand why people feel that way, but Hollywood is a very different kind of community, and we have different kinds of people, different kinds of issues than in either the black-white paradigm or in the paradigm of the basically old Anglo areas. And we have very different attitudes and very different approach to what you might call outgroups, including gays, lesbians, for instance, who are people who in certain parts of this country are pretty much anathema, but are a major functioning part of the New York economy, of the Los Angeles economy, of the San Francisco economy, parts of our society, parts of our family, even for those of us who are not parts of that group. The same thing is true with the very close connections that now exist among the various ethnic groups. And as American society begins to fragment in a way that I'm not saying is necessarily good, but is in a way that I think is pretty clear, those ethnic and cultural groups are going to become more and more important to the people who are in them. And that is also increased by the fact that with new telecommunications technology, transportation technology, a Chinese kid growing up in Los Angeles, for instance, can now go to Taiwan with an ease that's almost that would have been impossible 20 or 30 years ago, and also can watch Chinese language TV and read a Chinese newspaper every single day. It's going to be a very different kind of society. And I think the challenge for the Congress is to understand how to deal with this kind of cultural diversity. People in Utah may have very, very different standards than people in Los Angeles or in New York, and we have to figure out a way to allow for this diversity to express itself culturally and understand that diversity. And that also means that those of us who live in the cosmopolitan areas have to have more respect and more willingness to allow those people who come from the other areas of the country to be able to respond to the paradigms that are important to them. Finally, this all ties into the economy because, again, diversity, as Alvin suggested, is going to be the thing that's going to drive the economy. Traditionally, what we see, particularly from Washington, is a focus on large institutions that are that first of all have a strong presence in Washington, or organizations, the type of people who get involved in organizations. The part of the economy that's growing the fastest, in many ways, is almost ignored in the world of Washington. First of all, these are not necessarily mom-and-pop businesses, but these are small but growing businesses. These are people who work in the information economy, in the fashion economy, in the international economy, and many of them are just simply too busy to interface with Washington, D.C. Their lines of business are very sophisticated, hard to pin down, very hard to identify by SIC code. What we see here, for instance, in Southern California, is as we move from a military-industrially dominated economy in many ways, which was very Washington-focused, we now have a very variated economy where most of the growth is coming from fields such as garments, textiles, medical equipment, computer software, and of course entertainment. And in those areas, you find in many cases there aren't a lot of very large companies that dominate the industry, but lots of very small companies and large complexes of sophisticated suppliers and individuals. In the entertainment industry, roughly 300,000 people make their living in the entertainment industry here in Southern California. At least 100,000 of those people are freelancers, and yet they are an intrinsic part of that industry. So I think one of the things that is very, very important to understand is that this new economy requires a different approach from the federal government and from local government than has been the case before. We find that in many ways that Washington doesn't understand this economy, in many ways feels hostile to it, and that's true, I think, particularly among some people who are connected to the old structures. We also understand that why things such as defense conversion were basically a big waste of money. We would have been far better off looking at ways to stimulate people's redeployment of themselves into other sectors of the economy, which is now happening, than to have wasted all this money on top-down Washington-based solutions. Now, this new economy, which has been developing, is very, very important for us to understand and is very needed to be studied. We did an in-depth study of the LA economy. We found 53% of all the private sector employees in the Los Angeles area work in companies that are less than 15 years old, and that these companies are also, in many cases, and some indication may even a majority, are owned by Latinos and Asians, predominantly immigrants. This is a whole new kind of economy. Now, in other parts of the country, you have a new economy that has a different type of structure, but nevertheless, I don't think anyone in Washington has really been thinking about how do you fit into this new kind of economy. So does Washington have a role? I think it does, but I think the first thing that Washington needs to do, and people in the committee need to do, and I think would be most helpful, and I think also we enjoy it, is to go out and listen, as you will later today, to the people who are making this new economy and find out what it is that bothers them. What is it that they feel government should be doing? You may get some interesting answers, and I think they may be answers that might be of some use. Thank you very much.